what's going on? Welcome to The Doug Show. I'm Doug Cunnington, and today I'm going to tell you about some number of things that I've learned over 900 episodes. At first, I was going to do 900 things, but that's way too many. And then I thought maybe I could do like 50. It's a nice round number. And then I thought, oh, what about 45? That's shorter. And then I realized, actually, this is a bonus thing that I've learned. It's often better to like reduce the scope of whatever you're doing and you'll do a better job on it. So we're going to go through some. I bet it'll be like 10 or 15, something like that. I'll sprinkle it out throughout the year. I'll still tell you, I'll title this something grand, like 90 things I learned in 900 episodes. But as a preface to give you some reason to listen to me about this, I recorded about 600 episodes for The Doug Show, this podcast, and over 300 on my other podcast, Mile High Fi. That's a lot of episodes, and it takes a long time to do that. It, you know, if you try to cram it all into a short amount of time, you would still learn a lot. But I mean, even if you did, you know, one every single day, it's going to take you a little while. You could do the math on that one. So I have put in the time, and again, we'll go through as many as we can. One kind of cool thing that I've realized is the shorter episodes, about 30 minutes or so, give or take. I'm not even watching the time, but I'm saying what I'm going to say. I think I'm telling fewer stories, but that was a little test / focus in on preparing for certain episodes. And that's what I did in January. I think it worked fine. I also miss telling stories that have maybe little to no point, but it's just, you know, observations of my life. I'm talking about myself half the time, 100% of the time. Okay, we'll get into it. A lot of these in the beginning are around just being a creator. So they probably would and should apply to other mediums and formats, not just podcasting. I published this on YouTube as well. I didn't publish all of the Doug Show episodes on YouTube until a few years ago. So I think there was a time where I would publish the episode on YouTube with just a static thumbnail. That was kind of the practice in the day. And as time went on, people started putting in their like full video podcast and all that. So anyway, we'll keep this tight. I'll probably ramble on and tell a story here and there. But one thing that could be and should be evident in the number of episodes that I've published is I favor quantity over quality. And for me personally, it fits, and I'll describe some of my psychology that allows me to do that. But the bottom line is it's really good for me to ship things, finish projects, and we can consider each episode as a project, but finish like pieces of product, whatever it is, and ship it, even though it's not perfect. The character trait and the personality psychology that I have, I guess, around this being okay with imperfect products is I'm a satisficer. So there's a book by Barry Schwartz, Paradox of Choice. There's maximizers and there are satisficers. And there's a spectrum, of course. Some people are on one side or the other, just like any sort of spectrum. Probably on further on to the maybe the top one third of the group that is satisficer. So basically, if something meets the minimum criteria, I'm good with it. If there's imperfections, I'm okay with it. In contrast, and this creates a little friction, my wife is a maximizer. So quick example, if we're booking a trip, then she'll investigate the hotel and the Airbnb and do a ton of research over several weeks. And let's say it's 5 hours of research over a few weeks. And then she'll book a place. She's like, this is great. I will book this place. And then she'll continue to research and continue to look even after she's already made a decision. And I would say 50 to 75% of the time, she'll find a slightly better option. Of course, you don't know it's a better option. There's so many external factors, but basically she's like, this one seems better based on the research that I've done and the reviews and so on. So she'll find a slightly better place and then book that. And then, you know, she'll spend whatever, another several hours researching this and thinking about it and just pondering that decision. When I book a trip, I usually will do a little research, say 45 minutes on one day, and then I'll go back maybe the day after or within the next week, I'll research maybe for like one more hour. By then, I pretty much have my decision made and it's just a formality of booking the trip. Once I make the decision, I don't go back and second guess my decision. This happens with like flights too. So like and I've heard of other people too, just my wife is a good example that I have a lot of experience with. So she'll book a flight and then she'll check to see if there are other cheaper options. And at some point, it's just a waste of time. And you won't know if that's a better option or not. Now with the flight, maybe you could save a few bucks, but when you look at the amount of time and what you could be doing instead of researching, unless you get off on doing the research, which some people do, that's another character trait. All that to say, quantity over quality, and I expect to get better over time if I am analyzing what I'm doing. Not to say there's not improvement to be made, but the extreme, and this is a pushed example, is if people really, they only want to publish a video, they only want to publish a podcast or whatever when it's perfect, and it turns out you could always tinker with the editing. It's almost endless. You could go on and on and on. So at some point, it's just better to ship and get it out the door. And for me, that's worked really well. I'm not a perfectionist. I think maybe I had some of those tendencies early on, maybe when I was technically, I'm an engineer by education. But yeah, I let that stuff go. Because I ended up in consulting, so you do have to ship stuff and make compromises on, like, you know, the risk factors involved and the trade-off of like perfection versus the timing and everything. Number two, your value often is your perspective and basically you sharing your opinion. So when I started my blog and when I started other stuff, obviously there were many tens of thousands, millions of people doing pretty much exactly the same thing that I wanted to do. And you may question, what will I bring to this? Other people are already doing this. Why should I? Like, who would even give a shit if I'm sharing my story? It turns out other people can relate to you, probably, or you can have other hooks where people just enjoy the way you tell stories, or your specific perspective reminds them of themselves or someone else in their family or whatever. For some reason, they like the way you present the information. And if you're doing interviews or other collaborative type content, then your ideas and your background can bring something new to that whole interview and the collaboration. So even if you don't think you're bringing something super unique, there's probably a good chance that a lot of people are going to relate to your stories and to the way you tell your whole story. Quick example of that is just me telling those stories over, I guess, the last episode, that's what it was. So there are many examples where I just hopped on and I was like, hey, I kind of had some ideas, but not really. Let's publish. And I was publishing 2 episodes per week for this show for a while. And at that point, unless you're really generating like new information all the time, I mean, you have to tell some stories and people do care. And the thing is, I knew that to be true because I am a consumer of blogs, podcasts, YouTube, and you get hooked on someone's story, even if you know, they come from a completely different background. There's something interesting about following along with someone's story. Number three, this is audio quality. And I'm a stickler, not that every episode that I've had has turned out really great, but when I, at this point, I have my studio dialed in pretty well. And there's different filters and different mastering and noise reduction things you could do to improve audio. But when I do an interview with someone who maybe they're in a noisy co-working spot and they have, you know, a cube and not an office, and I could hear that noise, and maybe it's whiteboards and a big glass surface, if it's so echoey that I have a hard time like hearing, it's super annoying. And the thing is, the audio quality level is so high these days where people can record on their phone and have essentially like studio quality if they're in a quiet room. But audio quality, hugely important to me. If you're recording in a remote situation, which I have done at conferences, or maybe it's at a retreat or something like that, where you can't control everything, that is okay. Do the best that you can. It's often good to preface and say, hey, you know, we're recording this out here in the field. It's not a studio setup. It's as good as we can do with what we have, but it can be tough. And people can make a decision. And if they're audiophiles, they can not listen to it. But you let people know. And as long as most of the time it's as good as you could do, then you'll figure it out. The other thing is, like, even though I have recorded in noisier situations, like at a conference, you could be in a big expo hall and there could be noise, but as long as you're on a good microphone, then it's mostly going to be okay. It'll be a gentle hum. You kind of feel the energy of the room, and that's not a bad thing given the right situation. Now, if you record every single episode with, funny enough, there's, I forgot to turn off the furnace. So I have things dialed in, but the furnace is 10 feet away from me over there. I should be able to remove this with the mastering software. And actually, I'll be quiet for a second. There's a gentle hum, but I think we'll be able to get rid of it. I'll probably leave this in just as a little, we don't get everything perfect. So I learned a bunch of stuff, but sometimes I forget to turn off the furnace. It's winter, you know, it slipped my mind there. It's winter, you know, it slipped my mind. I think we need the heat on. So anyway, audio is really important. This includes video as well. So people may think, oh, I really want to have a really great camera. I need a DSLR. You really don't. You can record on your phone. If you have a Mac, you can use your iPhone as essentially a webcam. These cameras are really, really good, and they could handle a lot of different lighting situations, especially low light. So if you have an iPhone or any smartphone with a good camera, you're probably going to be able to do a really good job recording, but you need to get the audio dialed in, and super important. Number four, we're only going to make it through like 10 here. So number four, the big guest that you get on your show may not make a big difference. So you may think, oh, it's going to be so amazing when I get this person on the show, or other inflection points. So you may think, oh, someone's going to cover me. I'm going to be on their show. Super rare to have some specific inflection point. Now, one quick interesting point that it took me a little while to figure out, but I have a couple friends with huge podcasts. They publish two or three times a week. Their audience can barely keep up. They're publishing so much, it's hard for everyone to listen to every episode. And if you get that person on your show, you're thinking, oh, their audience is going to follow them over here and they're going to really, you know, boost the numbers. It turns out if someone is producing a shitload of content, then most likely it's not going to make a huge difference. Now, it could be different if it's a giant, huge, you know, household name or something like that. But typically that's going to be pretty rare for, you know, an average self-produced podcast to have that kind of person on the show. The one caveat on that, you might be able to get a big household name on your show, but they probably have a book. So book launchers and book publishers are really direct folks towards podcasts. Probably the most common kind of email that I get is someone launching a book. They're an expert. They have so many years of experience. They've done all sorts of amazing things. And I don't want to promote someone's book generally. Typically, it's not an audience match. There's a handful of times where it's really worked out and I like the person and they happen to be a personal friend. Jillian Johnsrud, whose book is sitting next to me, I interviewed her and we actually did a few collaborations, but she's a friend and I love the book. There's a couple others where they're personal friends, but they're not household names. So they're personal friends and they have an audience size probably similar to mine. So all that to say, you may think something's super important because it's going to represent an inflection point for you and your audience size. It's almost always not going to happen. It's typically just it's a slow burn. It's a slow rise. If you do get those flash in the pan things, it's probably going to be something outside of your control based on timing, luck, and external factors. Number five, this is something I don't do, but is really a true thing. So editing is really where the magic can happen. I do very little editing. I will remove a couple, you know, mistakes here and there. But even when I had a VA editing and producing the show, I was like, let's keep it raw. Those are kind of the shows that I like to listen to. I don't want to hear an overly produced show that sounds a little too polished. Those have their place, but not the kind of show that I wanted to produce. Part of it is laziness. Part of it is knowing like it will take this much effort. It'll take this many resources to produce a show like that. And I don't want to do that. So it's a conscious decision on my part. But if you can edit tightly, if you can keep most of the story intact and remove the irrelevant pieces, it's just like writing or anything else. Like if you could say it in fewer words, it's probably better to leave it at that. And there might be some things that you think are essential, but it turns out you can remove them. So it's just a decision that you have to make if you want to have the more highly produced and edited shows. Those will probably have a tighter, cleaner message. And depending on what you want your show to be, that might be the way to go. Again, I like the shows where you get to know the host and the background and their life and their stories and all that stuff. I connect to that. And that's the kind of show I wanted to have. So that's why I do minimal editing. However, editing is really powerful. Number six, here's another one that I don't really do so much anymore, but I have in the past. Occasionally I'll do it, but this is batching. So batching content or different pieces of your process can help you produce more content in a consistent way, potentially easier and faster. In the beginning, I didn't have the studio set up with like permanent lights and a tripod and a place where I could just turn on a couple items and then hit record. It was setting up lights in the living room, doing it different each time, trying to figure out how to, you know, hook up the microphones and all this other stuff. So setup and teardown was like 30 minutes to an hour. And each, right? 30 minutes to an hour to set up and take down. So if I could record one episode, cool. If I could record six episodes, well, that represented a huge time savings. That said, the issue that you run into if you batch content before you have your process dialed in, if you make a mistake when you're batching content, then your mistake propagates throughout. So again, with that example, if I recorded six episodes and I had one little mistake, for example, let's say the microphone was hooked up a little bit wrong. So it's in mono instead of stereo, and you can only hear it on one side. And I didn't know how to fix it, right? There are ways to fix that. But let's say I make a little mistake. Now I have that mistake, not just one time, which would be annoying, but now you have it six times. So you have to fix it, and then you feel annoyed and disappointed that you've goofed up. So only batch when you have your process dialed in. I mentioned that I only do this periodically. Typically, I take a lot of time off during the year, not on a big schedule, but sometimes I'm like, you know what? Let's take July off. So I'll record a bunch beforehand, get everything all dialed in, scheduled and ready to go. And then I got a little time off. It's great. But typically nowadays, especially that I'm producing the show myself and doing the editing myself and all that stuff, no sponsors, no revenue coming in, that sort of thing. So because of that, it's kind of nice for me to just look at each week at a time. Now, I can get a little bit ahead, and sometimes I do, but typically I'm recording like the preceding week, makes it a little more timely. And the thing is, like, it's easy for me, again, to come downstairs, turn everything on, hit record, talk for a little while, and then do a minimal amount of editing. Takes me probably an hour to edit and schedule or something like that. Not a huge amount of time, but anyway, I could get all that done in, you know, one chunk of time. That's not too big. It's not a huge ask where I'm like, all right, I'm going to, you know, set aside half a day to do all this stuff. I'm just like, okay, I can record it one day, I'll edit it the next day. It's like 1 hour each day. That's cool. That I could handle that. I could handle that. It's not too much. So essentially, you have to look at your own situation and figure out if batching is a good idea for you or not. Number seven, well, think of this as sort of like the silent majority of your audience. You don't hear from them, especially with podcasting. You don't hear from them really at all. You'll see some reviews occasionally, but think about the last time you left a review for a podcast. It's hard to get people to take that action. But it, essentially, when you see negative comments or you get an email or something like that, those are going to stick to your brain and it's going to hurt your feelings and you'll be a little defensive and you're like, why are these people so mean? But most of your audience, probably, they like it. You just don't hear from them. They're content with what you're doing and that's great, cool. But you don't hear from them. So the thing is, you can ignore most of the negative comments. In my other show, Mile High Fi, it's a much bigger audience and the reviews are mixed. It's either 4 or 5 stars, a lot of 5 stars or 1 star. And sometimes people listen to one episode and they're like, fuck this guy. 1 star, doesn't know what he's talking about, ask too many ads. And it's like, there's no ads on the show now. Like, we tested ads and we only had one, or we were like, hey, if you like the show, have some donations. So they were like, fuck these guys. They only ask for money and there's supposed to be a personal finance podcast. Obviously, if someone has listened to more than a couple shows or any recent show, they would read that and think, well, that doesn't sound anything. There's actually no ads on the show. These guys, they don't even ask you to sign up for the email list. They just do the show. It seems like they're just doing it for fun, which is exactly what we were doing. We're doing it for fun. At some point recently, which I've talked about in the last couple episodes, the show wasn't breaking even anymore. I was losing money every single month because it takes a few $100 per month to run the show. And that's even with a producer and editing for free, right? He just volunteers from the audience. So with software, whatever, drive storage, cloud storage, there's other hosting. There's a handful of things. It's not a huge amount, but like the prices of everything, especially software as a service, SaaS, prices go up. They're like, 15, 20% each year. So now like the editing software used to be a lot more economic. Now, I think for my editor and myself, it's like almost $600 a year. which is pricey. I think, I mean, before, I want to say in the beginning, I can't exactly remember, but I want to say it was like 100 or maybe like $200, a little over 100 each person. And, you know, prices creep up, like that's part of what's going on. But at the same time, anyway, so remember, a lot of your audience is probably cool with you. If you get negative comments, you can take them from what they're worth. I would say detach yourself if you can. And if there's a nugget of truth in there, if there's something you could adjust, adjust it. Because there are some like reviews and comments that I got where I was like, I don't think I like this person. And then as I read it, I'm like, okay, like I'll think about this later. And then realize, oh, they actually have a good point buried in their negativity. They have a good point and I can adjust on that. Example is we used to do banter, and sometimes we do. We used to have our banter at the beginning of the episode. A lot of shows have this format. Hey, what's been going on with you? Oh, we did all this stuff with the kids. We just went on vacation. Whatever, right? There's some like storytelling in the beginning, 3 to 5 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever. But some people, especially on YouTube, they don't give a shit. They just want you to get into it. So depending on, I don't do this all the time, but sometimes it's like, hey, what's going on? Boom, we're talking about X, and you get into it. Sometimes later, I will bury the banter in the middle of the episode, which is a fun way to break things up. In the past, that's how I would do an ad as well. So I would break things up in that way. And it worked, it kind of distracted people. And then we get back to it. And that's how I did ads. And it worked pretty well because like there was content integrated. Sometimes it was like 90 seconds. Sometimes it was 10 minutes of, you know, in air quotes, an ad, but it would be, we mentioned the product, then we talk about something else for 5 minutes, and then we mentioned the product again. So like people tended to listen because of the irregularity of how I organized that. It was organic within the content. Number 8, intro and outro music. Use it if you want, but I mean, most people, they don't care. Sure, if you're super into branding, which is totally valid. I mean, some people are, like they work in the marketing and branding industry. If it's your thing, go for it, do it. Like having coherent and consistent branding is good. As you can see with this show, again, because it's a hobby, I'm now putting my own music, which is, you know, it's cool for me to publish something. Again, I'm okay with imperfect stuff. It's like putting yourself out there. Some people are going to hate it and think, Doug, you hardly know how to use your equipment. Like, what are you even doing? And for someone to even have a judgment or an opinion on music that I'm creating, that's a fucking win for me, right? I mean, even if it's not positive, at least like someone cares. I'm not trying to do a bad job, by the way. If you want to have intro or outro music, that's totally cool. But it's really, I mean, it's more for you. It's more for you, the host and the producer, than anybody else. Most people, they don't give a fuck. Just tell your story, right? You don't have to worry about it too much either. You can change your music. So for my other podcast, we didn't have music for like a year or year and a half. And I was talking to my partner. I was like, oh yeah, we'll put it off. We'll just publish. I don't think anyone cares about it. Turns out they don't. They don't really care about it. And then when we put the music in, it was fine. It doesn't make a huge difference. And it's not like people are going to listen or not listen to your show based on intro or outro music. Unless it's like super, there's some shows where I'm like, is this music like congruent with the host or how they talk or their attitude? And sometimes it's not really. So I wonder how it gets in there. All right. I think we can, number 9 is a two-parter. So the numbering is going to be all screwed up when we get into the longer numbers, but I'll just count it as 1. So it's good to niche down and pick kind of a narrow topic when you're starting out. You may be one of the few people in that area and you can kind of broaden your content and your spectrum of content topics if you want to. But it's good to niche down and pick something very specific. That said, when you do niche down, it's okay to go outside of your niche. So if you're thinking, hey, we basically only talk about SEO and marketing, is it okay if I talk about travel? It turns out, I mean, I never set that cage up around me. I called it the Doug Show from the beginning. And I was like, I want to be able to tell stories. I'm not going to be doing niche sites forever. And this was in 2019, which, you know, I had no clue that the bottom was going to drop out in the niche site and content site world and SEO in general. But I was like, I'm keeping this broad. I'm going to tell stories. I'm going to interview. I will have like a focus on affiliate marketing and websites and SEO in the beginning, for sure. That'll be the majority of the content, but I have no issue going outside adjacent areas for sure, but also to go wildly in a different direction. And back during COVID, oh, it's crazy times, right? But remember that show Tiger King? The like promo would pop up, or the, you know, the flash page there would pop up. And I was like, is that David Spade? Like what? Who is that? What is that? But anyway, COVID, weird times. My wife recorded with me some, and we were watching, and I was like, we got to record and just talk about these episodes. So I think back in 2020, in the summer, we would like set up the microphones in the living room. We'd get like a pitcher of beer and then record. Those are a mess for sure. And, you know, who would even go back? It was relevant at the time, I guess. But anyway, that said, I wasn't held captive. I wasn't held captive by my topic area. And it's okay for you to go outside of it. It's totally up to you. And the thing is, like, if you want to not burn out and you want to have longevity, which I think is one of the keys, don't burn out. And one way to not burn out is to not get bored and to be excited to produce the content. And you have to vary the things that you're working on. Otherwise, even if it's your obsession can have sort of a darker side, and you can burn out even on the thing you love, which is a bad thing to happen because you do love it so much. All right, number 10, this will be the last one for today to keep these episodes tight. And then we'll do multiple parts over the next several episodes or months. How about months? Wouldn't it be wild to do 10 episodes in a row? But we're not going to do that because we need the variation that I talked about. So when I started, I pretty much did like one take because I don't like editing. And I already knew that from YouTube. So a lot of the early episodes, they were literally one take, and you have to talk yourself out of a corner that you've painted yourself in verbally. And then you have to just keep going, and you have to remember what you were talking about. Many times I'll follow a thread, stream of consciousness and talk about something and then hit some other topic. Sometimes it's hard for me to get back to the original topic, and, you know, age is showing and everything, but sometimes it's just too scattered. Notes help, of course, but you do not have to do it this way. And I know my impression before I started podcasting and, you know, meeting some of the people, I learned that. So my impression before I started podcasting was people were like really good It's speaking and doing interviews, and it sounds like there's no edits because these shows were more highly produced than it seemed, just because these were generally like regular folks and they had high quality equipment. Also, they weren't saying, hey, we're editing a huge amount. Turns out it's hard for us to speak without filler words. And I met a lot of people in person, and not a ton, but several of them. They couldn't speak as cleanly, just having a conversation one-on-one. They used a lot of filler words, and I was pretty surprised. And they were a lot more monotone and just not, they didn't have the same podcasting personality, number one, but it did seem like they had a lot more filler words, and those were edited out. And it became apparent, yeah, their show is edited heavily. It's how you produce content. So some people will do whatever, 15 takes, to say each one of the points that I went through, and they'll have a really awesome, like well-produced video, but it takes them like 10 times as long. Respect for people that want to do it. They have different goals than me, all that kind of thing. But for me, I was like, I'm going to do one take. So you have to kind of decide like, hey, do you want to do one take? Are you more of a perfectionist going back to point one? Are you a perfectionist? Are you a maximizer? Do you want to do 10 takes on one specific item and then get the right one? Maybe you record, let's say you're doing YouTube. Let's say you record the same point 10 times so that you can get the best one, but also you record it in different locations. So you have that pattern interrupt of like a new scene. And that could be great for YouTube. Of course, if it's an audio podcast, then no one would care about that. But the point is, you can essentially, you just do a better job because you're getting the reps in each time you do it. And there's a way to make it much higher quality. And when I watch, you know, the YouTube videos that I watch, some are vlogs and those are a little more raw. They edit a lot regardless, but those are a little more raw, more informational topics. Like I've been watching a lot of fitness videos and some other guitar things. Those might actually have those 10 takes where, you know, the people have whatever, they have like million subscribers or millions of subscribers. So they have a pretty big budget and they have a team, they have people editing, they have a camera person, they have a light person. So like they are, it's probably all the same person, but basically they can record stuff in volume and have someone else edit it. I have like zero interest in doing that kind of editing. Some people love it, but it's not that I don't enjoy it. It's just, it takes forever and there's more fun things that I would do with my time. So that's 10. I only made it through 10, even though I've learned hundreds of things in the 9.5. So that's 10 items. We only made it through 10 of them today, which is not bad. I've learned probably hundreds of things and I snuck in probably some subtopics in here, but maybe over the next few months, yeah, every few episodes, I'll go back and revisit the things that I've learned from these 900 plus episodes. The thing that is clear for me is like podcasting is fun. So I could stop this podcast on a dime and it would be totally fine. I would miss it a little bit, but I would be able to go on. It would actually save me money because I'm paying for certain, you know, things to produce this show. It wouldn't save me a ton of money though. Same thing with my other show. Now I have more donation supporters on my other podcast, but I could literally stop podcasting on that show too. And it would be fine. There's no outstanding obligations. There's no liabilities or anything like that. I could literally stop and it would totally be fine. The thing that I've learned is I really do love the format. I love podcasting. I grew up listening to radio shows. The blend of having a YouTube portion of it is kind of fun also. And there's obviously dozens of other things that I've noted as well, but I do enjoy the format in the low friction environment to be able to like record like this is really cool. So thanks a lot. If you enjoyed this episode, I'm glad that you did. You can leave a review out there if you want. And if you have any questions or show ideas, you can email me feedback@doug.show.